The teachings of the Buddha talk a lot about how and why our minds create suffering. Talk a lot about the various conditions that lead us to struggle. We've been exploring this a lot these last days, looking at the habitual conditions, what has been shaped in our past and how that's arising now. Everything arising now based on conditions. Conditions not only of the past, but also of the present moment. And that point, actually, that what we are experiencing in this moment is shaped not just by the past, but also by this moment. How the mind is, what the relationship of the mind is to the experience in this moment. That's, we could say that may be why freedom is possible. If it were just stuff from the past, conditioning now, just a deterministic kind of unfolding. Freedom wouldn't be possible. So I think something about the insertion of the conditionality that what unfolds in the next moment is not just dependent on what happened in the last moments, but it's also dependent on what's happening now. There are different teachings on conditionality in the suttas. One side of it explores the conditions that come, that lead to the creation of suffering. Dependent origination. That side of things. And that one does speak both about what's happening in the past and also happening right now. The dependent origination is a chain, a set of 12 conditions that point to that. Describe how suffering comes to be. And the chain begins with ignorance, not understanding suffering, ignorance about the truths of impermanent, unreliable, not self. So that's a kind of a driver of suffering. Another driver on this chain of conditions is craving. Now, with feeling as condition, craving often results. Feeling arises pleasant, unpleasant, neutral, and craving for more of that pleasant, craving to get rid of the unpleasant, that tumbles on towards clinging, becoming, birth, suffering. Those links, the becoming and birth, can be understood in some forms of the teaching are understood to refer to birth into a next life, but also can be understood or related to birth into an identity. So this description of the conditions leading to suffering, one of the teachings here is like, okay, so feeling tone may arise. Feeling tone arises every single moment. And feeling tone arises for beings, whether they are awakened or not. And so feeling tone arises, and if that feeling tone is arising in the field of ignorance, where ignorance is present in the present moment, my understanding of that chain of dependent origination is like when a experience is arising in the field of ignorance, that whole cycle is picked up in a moment. It's like suffering's arising right there. When there's ignorance in the mind, feeling will lead to craving. That's the relationship in the present moment. When there's ignorance or craving in the mind in the present moment, suffering's in the present moment, that whole chain of dependent origination, just poof, that split second. And so that relationship in the present moment, if ignorance is not present in the present moment, something else happens. Feeling arises and craving does not arise. Craving is not picked up. Clinging is not picked up. Identification not picked up. Suffering does not arise. Same feeling tone, different field in which it's arising. So the suttas offer this teaching around the conditions that tend to move us in the direction of suffering, and in particular, ignorance and craving seem to be the drivers of that cycle. And there's also a teaching that talks about conditions that, or there are teachings that offer conditions that support freedom. And some of those teachings are about the absence of certain things, like the absence of ignorance. If ignorance is not arising, the teaching says, well, the rest of this whole thing doesn't come up. If craving doesn't arise, the rest of this whole thing doesn't arise, and so suffering does not arise. So it points to a shift in the relationship in the present moment. So how does that shift happen? All of the Buddhist teachings we could look at as instructions for how to support that shift, how to support the mind to not pick up ignorance, not pick up craving. So what are the conditions that support letting go, support craving, ignorance to not happen. There's another framing of dependent origination that describes, the Buddha is said to have reflected, well, what would support freedom? Are there conditions in the world that would support release from suffering? And the Sutta describes kind of stepping back, you know, each in his reflection, well, what would support freedom is release. What would support release? Not being, not having a sense of needing to pick something up, dispassion. What would support dispassion? Not being enchanted by believing that things would be useful if they were picked up. Disenchantment, that would support dispassion. So he stepped back and came back to the supporting condition for freedom is clearly seeing suffering. The first link in this chain, it's another 12 part chain. And it begins, this chain begins with suffering. So there's a lawful process that's described that with a certain kind of seeing around suffering, a certain kind of faith will arise. So I'll just state these links now in the way they're described in the sutta, not describe them in much detail right now, but I'll do a little bit of unpacking of them. So suffering is a supportive condition, is the supporting condition for faith to arise. Faith is the supporting condition for delight to arise. Delight supports joy. Joy supports tranquility. Tranquility, happiness. Happiness supports concentration. Concentration supports seeing things clearly. Seeing things clearly here, the translation is avyata bhuta, that word we talked about the other day. Seeing things as they actually are. Seeing things as they actually are is a supportive condition for disenchantment. Disenchantment, the supportive condition for dispassion. Dispassion for release. And release for the understanding that this being, for this being, freedom has been reached. So this sutta uses an analogy I talked about it the other day. I'll just remind you today that the way these conditions unfold is said to be very natural, a natural kind of just one is the supporting condition for the next. It says, just as rains falling on a mountain will gather into gullies, into ponds, overflowing from ponds into streams, into rivers, and into the ocean. Just that's just a natural process. The water doesn't have to try to do that. It's the nature of gravity. It's the nature of the mountain. It's the nature of the water to flow downhill. And so the unfolding of this path is said to follow a very natural consequence. Some of this section of this set of conditions we met before in the Simile of the Cloth Sutta. And there's a similar kind of natural unfolding described there. I'll remind you of that language and what it was following from there in Transcendent Dependent Arising, this teaching, the faith or the confidence is following from, basically from seeing suffering in a new way. From hearing, hearing something, I'll describe this a little bit more in a moment. Hearing a teaching that says, yes, there's something different you can do about suffering, and there's some possibility of something different. So there's some faith that might come up there. And in the Simile of the Cloth, the beginning of this whole sequence is that understanding that these reactive habits and patterns get in the way of happiness and peace. So that was that whole, I don't know if you figured it out, but I was doing a whole bunch of talks on understanding and abandoning in the first like 3 or 4 days there. Lots of talks on understanding and abandoning, how that works, how this practice supports it. So the understanding that these states of mind are not helpful, the understanding there. So that's the kind of shift, right, where suffering is understood in a different way. And the understanding of that, it said in the Simile of the Cloth, will lead to abandoning. Understanding this, one abandons it. And so this to me is right in this place of the suffering faith link. It's seeing suffering, all of these reactive habits and patterns are suffering. These patterns described in the Simile of the Cloth. Ill will, anger, resentment, contempt, insolence, envy, avarice, deceit, fraud, etc. These things are in the way of happiness and peace. These things stain the mind. Understanding they are in the way of happiness and peace, one abandons them. And so one sees they are suffering, and understanding that they're in the way of happiness and peace, the mind shifts its relationship to them instead of thinking they're going to do something for us. The mind turns to a different relationship, to be curious about them, to be interested in understanding them, rather than either believing them and just blindly following them, or resenting them and hating them and trying to get rid of them. It's this middle path the Buddha talked about. Look at what's arising and understand it. So this is in the Simile of the Cloth. It starts there with that understanding these reactive habits and patterns, and then the abandonment follows. And that's where this chain then kind of hooks into these links from dependent origination. So when one has known these states and has abandoned them, one acquires unwavering confidence in the Buddha, the Dharma, the Sangha. So there's the faith, confidence, unwavering confidence. That's faith. This works. This is useful. And that arises, that faith arises because we've seen and understood and experienced the abandoning, experienced that the mind will let go, that wisdom will support that letting go. That's deeply supportive of confidence. That understanding resulting in the letting go, that abandoning of those qualities, those reactive habits and patterns of mind, deeply supportive of confidence. I love the way this is phrased in the sutta. I don't remember emphasizing this the first time we went through this. When one has given up, released, abandoned, and relinquished the imperfections of mind in part, one considers, I'm possessed of unwavering confidence. Then one gains inspiration in the meaning, inspiration in the Dhamma, gains gladness with the Dhamma. And this word gladness here is the same word that is translated from the Pali as the word for delight in dependent origination, in the transcendent dependent origination. So gains gladness connected with the Dhamma. When one is glad, joy is born in them. In one who is joyful, the body becomes tranquil. In one whose body becomes tranquil, feels happiness. In one who feels happiness, the mind becomes concentrated. So again, a very natural description. Not a lot of work to do, not a lot of churning to do. So this also is pointing to this natural unfolding. But I like the point here. When one has given up, released, abandoned these reactive states of mind in part, one gains confidence. So that in part piece kind of points to the gradual nature of this process, but even a little bit of seeing, even a little bit of letting go and seeing, wow, that actually worked. Confidence becomes strong. And so that confidence then encourages us to more understand, which leads to the abandoning, leads to more confidence. So there are these kind of conditions. It's natural for that understanding and abandoning to lead to confidence, to lead to kind of a sense of, yes, this is useful, this stuff is useful. So there's confidence in the practice, confidence in the teachings, confidence in our capacity to do it, all kinds of, you know, sense of that support. And so that gets redirected back to doing more of it, seeing things clearly, understanding more clearly, maybe a little bit more in part understanding and letting go, more confidence. So in this teaching of transcendent dependent arising, the links from one to another, that first, you know, suffering supports faith, faith supports delight, delight supports joy, joy supports tranquility. When there is faith, the next piece here, you know, I just described a little bit about how faith might come up and how that might then step back and support more understanding. And in a way here in the transcendent dependent arising, it's suffering supports faith. And the teaching there, or one of the ways of understanding that, is that when one hears a teaching that says, you don't have to be completely run over by suffering, it's possible for the mind to free itself from suffering, that there's some kind of sense of maybe the mind kind of perking up and saying, oh, is that possible? maybe beginning to engage a little bit. And I think that faith has so many different levels. Faith starts with just hearing information. And I talked about these levels of wisdom the other day, and it's like the faith kind of tracks those. So start with just hearing information. It's like, well, does this make sense to me? Maybe not, but nothing else has worked. I might as well try it. And even that willingness to engage a little bit is some faith. And then there's some engagement. So we've heard a teaching about suffering, a different teaching about suffering, that leads to a little bit of sense of, well, maybe. And then we engage, like the description around noticing the reactive habits and patterns of mind and understanding them, they're abandoned. Confidence grows and so supports the sense of faith in those teachings. Instead of being just a believing what somebody else has said, it's there's some sense of understanding for myself, this works, this is helpful. So the confidence, the faith is deeper. It's not just borrowing it, it's actually connected to having seen it for ourselves. So in the exploration of transcendent dependent arising, we can think of each pair of qualities there, each pair of conditions as kind of mutually supportive. So faith supports delight. With faith as condition, delight can arise. And that is, you know, that's also natural. I mean, if you actually start to see there's a path and a sense of a little bit maybe of confirmation that, oh, this actually works. This is a very delightful thought. The experience of having a taste of even the tiniest bit, in part, of a release. It's like the heart starts to sing, yes, maybe there's some other way. And that's like, that's delight. And so that delight then will reinforce the engagement, which supports and strengthens the faith. Delight and joy. When there's, I'll go back over those in just a moment. I'll just leave it that these conditions support each other, and I'll talk about the links in just a moment. So my understanding of this teaching is that it's you've got these conditions that support each other. When one is cultivated, it supports the next, and as the next one is cultivated, it loops back and supports the prior one. And even further down the chain, you know, if over time there's some measure of concentration that's developed, that measure of concentration then supports the capacity to engage with the teachings, engage with what we've learned with faith, which then supports more delight and joy. So they all support each other. And so I think of it not so much as a chain, but more as a spiral. A little bit of faith creates a little bit of engagement. A little bit of engagement, one sees a little bit of benefit, which leads more to more engagement, to see more benefit, and it just deepens very naturally on its own. In the chain of dependent origination, the one that describes the leading to suffering, that one is conditions leading to other conditions. The arising of this leads to the arising of that. The arising of this leads to the arising of that, and suffering is born. In transcendent dependent arising, it's a little bit of a, I don't know if paradox is too strong of a word, but there's a sense of cultivating conditions that support release, support the mind to be able to let go. But the letting go is not an arising. The conditions support freedom, support release, but the freedom that's described is not about acquisition. It's about letting go. So the cultivation of these conditions . There's no place for clinging in any of it. So cultivating the conditions that support letting go, even letting go of these conditions, ultimately, these supportive conditions. It's like the simile of the raft that I began the description of the other day. I didn't complete the whole thing. I talked about how you make that raft and you'll get wet. You know, it's like, it's helping you get across the flood, but you're not going to stay dry while you're doing it. But the end of that simile, many of you know this, but the ending of that simile is the Buddha saying, okay, so if you've crossed over the flood, you've gone to the other side of that flood. Now you've got this raft with you. The raft was what helped you get across the flood. It was useful to you. You know, it was supportive. It was supportive conditions that helped you get across the flood, that raft. And he says, what would it be a wise thing to do once you're on the other side of that flood, to like say, wow, this raft is really useful. Let me carry it around with me while I'm walking around on dry land. He says, no, that's not useful. What's useful is to set the raft adrift, you know, just walk, go your way. You no longer need to hold on to that raft. Even though that raft was supportive conditions for the crossing over, it's not needed anymore. And so there's a similar kind of understanding here. The conditions that are cultivated to support release, but they're not accumulated and held on to. We have to let go of all of it. And yet that doesn't mean that these things stop arising. It's the clinging, it's the holding, it's the that is released. So a little bit about this first part, this first section that overlaps with the simile of the cloth, this, what I called the gladness pentad the other day. Five qualities are used actually quite a lot in the suttas. These five are kind of pointed to over and over again with different conditions coming in that supports us kind of launching into this gladness pentad. Delight, these five, delight, joy, tranquility, happiness, concentration. In this teaching, in the Transcendent Dependent Arising, faith is the entry point into this. And also in the sutta, the simile of the cloth, faith is the entry point for this. With faith, there's delight. The delight that there's a way, something to do here, some way to engage. And that launches us into that. There's some other descriptions of ways to get in. Ethical conduct. One of the suttas says, in one who is virtuous, in one who is engaging in ethical conduct, there's no need for an act of will. May non-remorse arise in me. It's natural for one who is ethical, who engages in skillful conduct, that there will not be remorse arising. In one who experiences non-remorse, there's no need for an act of will. May delight arise. It's natural in one who is not remorseful for delight to arise, and then into this unfolding. Another place it's described is with generosity. There's a teaching of a nun who, oh no, it's a laywoman who was very generous. And she asked the Buddha, I'd like to ask you for some boons. And that was language that's kind of a trigger word. You know, it's like, you know, it's one of those words that the Buddha was saying, you don't ask for boons, you know. But she says, I promise you, these are skillful. And she said, what I would like to ask for the boons is I'd like to ask to donate to the Sangha. I'd like to ask to give requisites to the Sangha. I'd like to ask to give robes and food to the Sangha. And he said, okay, you can do that. And he said, well, why do you want to do this? And she said, because when I see a monk walking through this my village, and I see them wearing robes and eating food, I will know that I supported them. And that will bring delight into the mind. And joy and tranquility. Joy, tranquility, happiness, concentration. So that same kind of pattern again. So a way to think about these, just kind of reflect on these, how they support each other. Oh, another way in that's described, that's also in some ways very similar to simile of the cloth, is that when the hindrances are abandoned, delight will arise. That's very direct. When you experience a mind that has let go of the hindrances, it feels good. And I think there's a similarity in the, you know, having understood and abandoned these reactive habits and patterns. In this case, it brings confidence in between, but then again, delight. We taste that quality of mind that's free from our habitual reactivity. It's like, oh, wow, that feels really different. That feels good. And there is delight that the mind has been released from that being dragged around by those deeply conditioned habits. So there's different ways that the delight can arise, delight can come up. I think in the transcendent dependent arising, the way I connect mostly to this exploration, these unfoldings. So with delight, you know, if we're exploring experience through mindfulness and wisdom, exploring getting familiar with our experience, so that in fact there is this abandoning. When we experience the release from the hindrances in a moment, if we are in the present moment aware of that release from the hindrances, the shift from delight that the mind has been freed from that to an intensification to joy, rapture. That word can also be understood as really interested, rapt attention, rapt interest. seeing that the hindrances fall away, when you're really aware of that, it's going to get your attention. There's this kind of sense of, again, yes, this is useful, going to do this, going to be engaged with this. And so there's a kind of an intensification of the delight into joy. And then as, again, we are aware of the experience as this is unfolding, aware of the delight, aware of the joy, there's a kind of a touching into the quality of the experience. Joy and delight have a kind of an energetic quality to them. And at some point, the mind begins to, in the experience of that energetic quality, begin to gravitate towards more quietude. It's like the rapture gives like this burst of energy to continue engaging in the practice, but there's a part of the system, again, the system that wants to move in the direction of well-being, understands that that level of energy is a little bit high, you know, that there's a quieter place from which to engage. It's not that level of energy is understood that it can soften. And so that softening of the energy of the rapture, that's that tranquility. The mind will naturally kind of move towards tranquilizing, calming, the calming quality. And the flavor of rapture calmed is happiness. Very sweet kind of feeling. So one key thing that is I feel is useful to reflect on here in terms of this teaching. First thing, suffering is a supportive condition for the freedom from suffering. It takes a shift of relationship to it. So that suffering is not a mistake. And in fact, turning our attention to it will create the conditions for freedom, for its release. And then this first whole section, delight, joy, happiness, firmly on our path. This teaching really places them kind of as the foundation of our path, the ground from which we can meet experience. These qualities of mind, as we continue practicing, when there's some measure of ease, of interest, that rapt interest, and of some tranquility that can hold experience, it creates a container in which it's much easier for us to understand our suffering. And then with happiness as a supporting condition for suffering, the other day in the question, I talked a little about the different kinds of concentration, one-pointed concentration and the moment-to-moment concentration. Both forms of concentration are possible in the development of this path. When the mind can be at ease with what is happening moment to moment, happy with arising of whatever is arising, momentum of mindfulness will build. There won't be a kind of natural pull out, wanting to get out of the present moment. The mind is pretty content with being moment to moment with present moment experience, and that momentum of mindfulness moment to moment is the development of concentration, whether on one object or changing objects. So in the transcendent dependent arising, concentration supports a deep seeing into conditionality, into impermanence, into not self, into the nature of experience as unreliable. So the next link following concentration is knowing and seeing things as they are, yata bhuta. So the concentrated mind, the mind that can see things moment to moment to moment to moment, has the clarity to start to see the impermanent nature of experience, the conditioned nature of experience, the unreliable nature of experience. So I think of this as another loop back. So as the mindfulness gains momentum, it starts to see things as they are. And what does it see as they are? All of our arising experience, including all of those reactive habits and patterns, which sometimes, because they've been abandoned in part, they still keep coming up. And yet that concentrated mind can really see them, understand them as impermanent, unreliable, not self. So the concentration, that moment-to-moment mindfulness, is applied to seeing things as they are, seeing what's here, seeing the moment-to-moment experience, strengthening and nourishing all of those qualities of delight, joy, happiness, concentration, just that natural reinforcing. In the simile of the cloth, concentration in that, from that gladness pentad, the next thing that's pointed to is not yata bhuta, though. And so this is a piece I wanted to reflect on a little bit. In the simile of the cloth, the next thing that is said to happen with that concentrated mind following from understanding, abandoning, confidence, delight, joy, tranquility, happiness, concentration, the next thing is one abides in metta. And I think this points to how that concentration has been developed. In the simile of the cloth, it really is, I feel the simile of the cloth is really great mapping onto what we're doing here. Because it's pointing directly to, you start with looking at the stuff in your mind, where you are. You start with looking at all these, you know, reactive habits and patterns, understanding them. You're starting right from the messiness. You're not going concentration, settle on one thing, settle on the breath. Starting from all of this stuff. And the way we do that is through this cultivation of a heart mind of allowing interest. And so the whole way, again, as we've been reinforcing over and over again, the whole way that this concentration has developed is through a moment-to-moment mindfulness that's infused with loving kindness and compassion. And so as that concentration gets strong, as the momentum of the mindfulness is strong, one of the things that's there with it, or the qualities that are there in the mind with it, are the Brahmaviharas. That's just the natural consequence of how we've been engaging in the practice. Metta, loving kindness, karuna, compassion, mudita, sympathetic joy, upekkha, equanimity. The mind, that concentrated mind, has those qualities. And so there can be the touching into that, the recognition of those qualities. That's essentially opening to the attitude of the mind as it's stable and present with moment-to-moment experience, those flavors can be seen. And in the simile of the cloth, it points to, yes, those flavors can be seen. And I apparently didn't bring the page. I only brought the first page, but I'll try to remember it. But it's something like, and then, you know, abiding with those states, abiding with this mind that's filled, imbued with loving kindness, imbued with compassion, one understands that those two are conditioned. Those two are unreliable. So the simile of the cloth points to needing to abandon those as well. Again, abandon the craving, or abandon any clinging to them. And the paradoxical thing seems to be when we abandon clinging and craving to those states, it's like we have to really trust letting go. It's like, if I let go of them, they're going to go away. That's what we think. But with the momentum and the way this deepening happens, when we let go of, at a certain point, I mean, certainly not always, but at a certain point, the understanding is the letting go of that, then there's just the natural arising of those. It's like they don't go away. And we could say that the Brahmaviharas are kind of the natural qualities that would arise in a heart that is not clinging, not craving. We don't have to try to make those happen when the heart is not tied up in knots. That seems to be the natural, Gil used a quality, a word, kind of emergent. These qualities are, could be considered emergent. And this, to me, is also connected with the framing of the wholesome qualities being rooted in the absence of greed, the absence of aversion, and the absence of delusion. The wholesome qualities not said to be rooted in something present, but something absent. And yet they are conditioned. And so the clinging to anything that's conditioned will result in suffering. So in a way, these two teachings kind of align again at this point. The knowing and seeing love, compassion, sympathetic joy, equanimity as conditions arising, one understands they too are impermanent, unreliable, not self. And so we're kind of back at the understanding, knowing and seeing things clearly, including the wholesome qualities, applying that curiosity to not only all the reactive habits and patterns of mind, but also to love and compassion and equanimity, and seeing when there's any, oh yeah, I want more of that, that it's so human to want to hold on to those. So counterintuitive that holding on is in the way of their development. So there's more to the teaching of transcendent dependent arising. To be continued.